All right, we're recording.
Okay.
And I guess we might as well just take it from the top. So it's June 2016, and something big has hit the dark web. It's a trove of healthcare data, more than 9 million patient records. That's 2 gigabytes worth of names, social security numbers, and more. And it's all on sale for 750 Bitcoin. That was worth something like $560,000.
$562,500, to be exact.
$562,500. For information that could expose 9 million people to really big problems, namely identity theft. So where did this sensitive data come from?
The Dark Overlord.
Is that like Voldemort?
Not really. The Dark Overlord, it's a hacker or group of hackers. It was sort of shrouded in mystery. No one knows much about them, but we do know this. They like to pick on healthcare. Just the day before this data dump, the Dark Overlord posted 650,000 medical records for sale on some shadowy website.
Right, right. They stole that from, what, 3 different healthcare groups?
Yep, and the Dark Overlord is still hacking healthcare. It's still going after patient data.
It's still a threat. So that makes me wonder, if the Dark Overlord has been around for years now, and it's still on the prowl, isn't it time that we try to understand what we're dealing with? Hey there, I'm Jack Murtha, and you're listening to the very first episode of Data Book.
And I'll be your co-host, Tom Castles. We're about to dive into the Dark Overlord story. But before we get started, we want to tell you what we're trying to do with this podcast.
So we both work on the editorial side of a magazine called Healthcare Analytics News.
And we both love really good stories.
Great stories. But in the healthcare data, AI, and cybersecurity space, sometimes it can be hard to see the human element in everything. And the human element is exactly what makes a story great.
So when you join us for Databook, we're going to give you great stories about the tech and the ideas that are transforming healthcare and, of course, the world. And you only need to give us like 30 minutes a week.
So keep an eye, or more accurately, an ear out, and be sure to subscribe.
Now let's get back to the Dark Overlord.
Yes. So to get to the bottom of this whole evil hacker collective thing, we brought on Gotham Thomas. He's a writer, and he spent a bunch of time researching the Dark Overlord for our magazine. Along the way, he picked up a few insights that helped tell the story of these renegades, whether they're renegades or wannabe renegades. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We know about the Dark Overlord's June 2016 data fire sale. What else has the hacker group done? How does it operate?
Well, their basic method is to find vulnerable networks, steal private data, and then they try to extort a payment in the cryptocurrency Bitcoin from their victims. And this group threatens to sell or lease the data they stole if they don't get paid. What makes them a little different from similar hacker groups who steal and ransom private data is that they don't use ransomware, a sort of automated system. They send emails, personal letters to their victims, and the tone can be personal and threatening and mocking. They have hacked healthcare systems, hospitals, clinics, and kind of unusually, public school district networks. And their most notorious hack was when they hacked a Hollywood sound studio called Larson Studios, and they stole several episodes of the Netflix show Orange is the New Black. Now, they found this sound studio that was doing post-production, working on the sound editing for these episodes, and they found that the studio's network had some security vulnerabilities. They accessed their storage, and they stole several of the episodes that were being worked on, and they asked for $50,000 in Bitcoin as a ransom, and they threatened to release the episodes online if they didn't pay. And the studios actually paid, and then the hackers used those stolen episodes to try to pressure other studios for payouts, and they ended up releasing the episodes on the internet for download anyway.
So that was kind of their big break, but we don't even know who they are.
No, we don't know much about them at all. It could be one person. They've made reference to being a small group. And, you know, one thing that you could deduce about them is that, you know, they're probably not American. There's some hints of UK or British English in emails they like to send. But, you know, we really don't know much about their personal identity.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think that, you know, a lot of people assume that the best hackers are out there kind of wearing masks and sunglasses behind these laptop screens. But these guys are just doing their work through something as seemingly innocuous as email phishing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. They make references to like being in the office together. So in some way, they treat what they're doing as sort of a white collar job, even though they're, you know, committing crimes.
It's really unbelievable. I'm just so surprised, you know, that if that's the case, you know, how this group is still so obscure. How do you think they're getting away with all of this stuff?
That's kind of an interesting question. You know, they enjoy publicity. They got a lot of notoriety after hacking those Orange Is the New Black episodes. They like to correspond with journalists. A lot of the research, the material that I researched for the story, came from the reporting of Vice's tech blog Motherboard, and you know, the Dark Overlord has corresponded personally with those reporters. They've corresponded with reporters from the Daily Beast and even like independent security bloggers on the internet. And the question is, you know, why don't we know more about them, and why do they persist? You know, the FBI is aware of this group. Larson Studios, the Netflix studio, contacted the FBI immediately after being hacked. But we don't know any details about any investigations into their real identities because the FBI doesn't share those details. The FBI did arrest a security researcher last year in Texas. His name is Justin Schaefer, and the FBI claimed he was associated with the group, but it's not really clear if those allegations are accurate. The FBI claimed that Schaefer had received a database of patient information, but you know, Schaefer says they had emailed him the database unsolicited, and Schaefer actually forwarded it to the FBI, and he's in fact notified the FBI repeatedly about Dark Overlord hacks. So it may be that the FBI is focusing on the wrong targets here, and they don't really have any strong leads.
You know, it seems like this group is kind of trying to expand out from its core. It's kind of getting its tentacles in every little crevice it can find. Why is it eyeing healthcare data in particular?
Yeah, I mean, healthcare data is a persistent theme in their history of hacks. You know, even though I mentioned school districts and TV shows, they've long hacked different kinds of clinics and hospitals. And, you know, security experts and hospital administrators told me that the kind of personally identifiable information you can get from, you know, patient records from healthcare institutions are valuable. Information like names and addresses and social security numbers and credit card numbers, those are valuable on darknet marketplaces like that June 2016 hack that you guys were talking about. These large databases can be sold for profit. The Dark Overlord offered this June database of more than 9 million records on a darknet marketplace called The Real Deal. The darknet is areas of the internet that aren't easily publicly available. It might be, you know, secret or private to log on to them. And, you know, there's a lot of black market information being offered on these kinds of networks like The Real Deal. And, you know, one of the reasons that people are willing to buy this information is that you can profit from them. You can use credit card numbers that are hacked to make money before the victims are aware and cancel their credit cards. One hospital security administrator I talked to used the example of using patient records and information to run Medicare scams. You can build a system for expensive medical equipment like motorized wheelchairs that you can then resell. And you know, since these pieces of equipment are valuable, can be resold for good chunks of money.
We know that this problem extends far beyond a single hacker group. But let's get to the heart of why we focused on the Dark Overlord. What are the implications for healthcare at large when you have these kind of highway bandits roaming the internet?
Yeah, I mean, the question is really frustrating because, you know, one thing that came out, that comes out again and again in situations like this is how powerless it can feel to be on the wrong end of an attack like this. But it's really important to address because, you know, whether it's a classic ransomware attack, an automated attack that just sends you an address to send some Bitcoin ransom, or, you know, whether it's, you know, possibly more frightening attack like the Dark Overlord hacks where, you know, they're sending you very personalized, threatening emails that refer to you by name. Other than the loss of patient data, which is a big problem, you know, there's other ancillary effects. I think the Allscripts hack covered by HCA News recently is a good example. You know, Allscripts is now subject to a class action suit alleging that Allscripts was negligent in protecting client data. There's financial repercussions. There's a loss of trust and faith from the people who trusted the ability of hacking targets to protect their important data. And there could be effects from partners who don't want to continue relationships, you know, after this sound studio lost those Orange is the New Black episodes. Variety reported that some of their partner studios ended relationships with them. That's another possible effect.
Yeah, the stakes are really high here. I report on this stuff all the time, and I might not be a hospital administrator, but just as somebody who is trying to unearth the truth and figure out exactly what the scope of the problem is, and as somebody who is a patient who has records out there, it's really frustrating to see healthcare flailing like this when it comes to cybersecurity, especially since a lot of health systems and hospitals are doing the best they can to prevent groups like the Dark Overlord from preying on them. And the Dark Overlord also hits, like you said, smaller practices. So what can healthcare organizations do to protect themselves more broadly?
Well, I think the number one thing to do to prevent ransomware attacks and like WannaCry, which spread virally, or attacks by groups like the Dark Overlord, is to keep your systems up to date. The vulnerabilities and holes that the Dark Overlord used to access systems were known vulnerabilities in older versions of Windows. So these are security problems that were known and disclosed. It's public information. Everybody knew about it. Hopefully, you know, everybody should have known about it. So these, you know, the Dark Overlord attacks could probably have been prevented by, you know, if the victims had kept all their operating systems on their network up to date, using the newest version of Windows instead of older ones like Windows 7, making sure that all security updates are run on their systems. That's like the number one way to prevent hacks. There are some ransomware attacks that are just random, viruses that spread automatically and, you know, trigger when they hit a vulnerable system. Others are specifically targeted. Attackers will look for particular systems and see if the particular hospital has a system with one of these vulnerabilities, and then they will break in and steal data. So one way to prevent this is to make sure all the holes that you know about are closed. A lot of this is just publicly available from, you know, for example, Microsoft, who will publish information about known security problems and publish updates and fixes for them.
Yeah, it seems like this group is not going after the biggest, baddest prey that it can find. You know, it's just like a lion after a herd of zebras. It's going to seek out the weak and the sick.
That's one way to look at it. I mean, also, it makes sense in some way that they attack institutions like public school districts, because the public school districts might not focus on very hardcore security or, you know, the newest operating systems for the computers on their networks. But it's really important to do that because, as the Dark Overlord has shown, if you don't, you're leaving a door open for them.
Thanks, Gotham. Before we let you go, can you give us one more Dark Overlord story? Something that stuck out to you, almost like a symbol of how the group functions and what it stands for?
I mean, I think the name is a really good guide to how they function. They like to cloak themselves in a certain amount of mystique. They chose a scary name, and their correspondence with victims is threatening and taunting. I think this approach serves to intimidate victims, and I think the Dark Overlord is trying to make their victims feel like they have no options. You know, after hacking a school district in Iowa and the Des Moines area, the Dark Overlord used this information they stole to send threatening text messages to parents and students. You know, they had all the contact information for parents and students at this, in the school district, and they sent them text messages to their cell phones and threatened violence at the school. I don't think there was much of a possibility of actual violence occurring at the school, because like I said, it's quite possible that this group is not in the United States. But I think this shows that they like causing fear and uncertainty, and they really have no compunctions about who they choose to target and the methods they use to cause fear and terror. I think they've decided, and you know, this is speculation in part, that the more fear they cause, the more likely one of their targets will be to pay up, if only to end those kinds of personalized threats and fear.
Profiting off fear. It's something that's not new, but this is definitely a new form of it. So Gotham, thank you so much for giving us your time and for joining us on this very first episode.
My pleasure.
So that ends the tale of the Dark Overlord. But it doesn't end Databook. Not quite yet, at least.
We're going to do a little something called the insight. That is basically a few minutes where we talk about the big idea behind all of this. It can come from this episode or something in the news, a key opinion leader, or even from you. It's our way of saying goodbye.
So today, I'm going to stick with the scary hacker theme. The Dark Overlord might not be as powerful as its name suggests, but it is endemic of a much faster threat plaguing healthcare. The age of big data and electronic medical records and analytics and AI, they've brought us a lot of good. But then there's this, the ransomware threat, the hacker threat.
The data breach threat.
The cybersecurity threat.
I think I heard one expert even call it the Achilles heel of health tech.
So a lot of hospitals and healthcare experts are lasering in on this problem. They're doing what they can to try to shore up their systems. They are acknowledging that it is a problem. But I wonder, in the course of my reporting, my day-to-day job, just how well they're doing it. I'm not sure that it's as widespread and as strong as it should be yet. And I recently talked to one person who said, well, duh, hospitals don't make money off cybersecurity. Curious what you think, Tom.
Well, maybe they don't make money off of it, but they lose plenty of money to it. There's no doubt about that. What I'm hearing is there's a ton of misconceptions surrounding data security. A lot of hospital execs seem to think that, you know, just hiring someone to run a vulnerability scan on your network is good enough. All that really does is just tell you where your vulnerabilities are. It doesn't do anything at all to kind of shore them up. So there's a whole lot of information, data, reputation, and financial well-being at stake here. Data is valuable more now than it ever has been. And there's no reason that investing in data security shouldn't be looked at as a vital component of any health system.
I think you're right on target with the blending of the bottom line and reputation. I see it all the time whenever there's a sizable data breach in a health system. They have to report them sometimes. Sometimes if it's not too big, they don't. But when I reach out to hospital administrators, communications departments, whomever, they're usually hesitant to talk. And again, when I talk to experts about that hesitance, it usually comes down to their financial stakeholders or their reputation. I'd like to call for right now any data breach victim, you are the victim. There might have been things that you could have done to avoid it, but you are the victim. And we in healthcare need to start opening up and sharing what we're learning on a more wide scale level.
It's really an altruistic practice, because the closer you hold it to your chest, the more that others are likely to suffer. And at the bottom of all this, you know, regardless of a financial bottom line or a reputation, is the well-being of patients. And that should be every health system's focus first and foremost.
Well said. Anyway, that's it for this inaugural episode of Databook. I'm Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles.
And we will see you next week when we explore what baseball could possibly have in common with healthcare. Until then, check us out online at hcanews.com or on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter, or even Instagram at HCA_news. Thank you. Bye.